Welcome back to Beholder to No One, a TTRPG podcast. Today I'm here with a familiar face, B, one of the creators of World of Wildevere and Parallel to Anywhere. Welcome back.
Hi, happy to be back. It's been a while.
It has been. And I still talk up your game because I still love it. It has a place in my heart forever.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
For those who haven't seen, you can go check out the World of Wildevere stream. We also have a episode previously with you and your cohort. Where I believe we discussed art.
A little bit. We kind of gone all over the place in that one, to be honest.
The link will be in the description down below if you want to go check out both of those. But today we're going to talk about collaboration in the TTRPG community in general. Like, what does it mean? How does it work? And just our personal experiences, because basically my entire show is collaboration with other people. So before we jump in, what does collaboration mean to you in this term?
Well, I guess it depends. In the most general sense, it's working with other people. However, the project needs other people, you know?
Yes.
Because ultimately, only one person can only do so much.
I'm slowly learning that.
Yeah. And sometimes you need, like, other skill sets to make something bigger happen.
Yeah. Don't do like I did, guys. And don't try to do it all yourself.
Yeah.
It's not. It doesn't work.
I started in the same place, too. So, yeah.
Funny enough, I'm hoping in the near future I can have somebody who will be able to help me with all of my stuff, because that's my goal of 2022. One of them is to have someone who is as passionate about podcasting and telling stories and inclusivity and all of that stuff, and also be willing to put in the work that I am willing to put into. Not necessarily the absurdity amount that I put into, but just to be able to break it in half practically.
Yeah.
That way it's not just me. And I have gotten better. Like, I have people helping me with some editing. So Matt Walsh from Walsh Animations, he's the one that edits all my discussion episodes. And then Tony from Make It Playable who is one of the players in the game, edits most of the Morning Blues episodes, which takes two things off my plate, which is great because I still have three other things. But I think collaboration for me started with learning that it didn't have to be just one person you had to collaborate with. And like, the community as a whole has so many different experiences and viewpoints and stories to share. So I've had over 100+ guests on the show, and it's been amazing because each one of them is different.
No, that makes sense.
I can easily have another 1,000 potentially eventually if I can get my name in the right people's hands and just expand further and further and talk about literally everything, or repeat the same story 82 times, because that's also what I did.
Yeah, that happens. Yeah, same story, really. It is easy to say you're collaborating when you're working with your two or three, you always work with these people. It is harder to venture out.
I mean, that is collaboration, technically.
It is. But also, like, sometimes things require more hands. And, like, admittedly, more hands are scary because not everyone is gonna care as much as that initial group is.
Yes. I have learned that experience firsthand.
Yeah.
My biggest advice, if you choose to collaborate with someone, not necessarily in, like, a one-shot discussion or a one-shot game or as a guest, but as a permanent person on your show, or as a permanent help for your show, like someone who's going to become partners equivalency with you, vet them first. Don't just get all excited because, oh, yay, there's somebody who's willing to do the work. Thank goodness.
Right. Yeah. I think that's hard, but yeah.
It is. It's very hard because I get very excited when something happens and I'm like, oh, finally, I was looking for this for like months. Perfect. Somebody's willing. Let's just do it. And then I don't like get to know them a little bit better first.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then after I get to know them, things just go really downhill really quickly.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
That's what happened to my first official co-host. I think we had like 10 or 15 episodes together. And the more episodes we had, the more we clashed with opinions.
I see.
And it's just like, and it wasn't even like silly opinion. Like, I mean, okay, I shouldn't have been as jaded, but they were like pet peeves of mine opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm a huge person against metagaming. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. I have issues with power gaming unless like everybody's okay with it. And this person was like pro all those things. I was like, oh yeah, I did that. I used to metagame all the time. And I'm just like, oh my God, I have a headache suddenly.
Yeah.
So your first collaboration was for World of Wildevere, is that correct?
I would say so, because beforehand I did have guest stars on Frostwalkers, which was my 5e thing, but those were people who were in the server and like basically already engrossed in the story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And while I had players, that was still when I was in my, I'll just do this and this and this. So like they showed up to games and that was it, you know?
Yeah. I didn't realize how demanding it would be, because the actual play, first actual play we ran was Behold Clearlight.
Right.
And I was the one that planned the schedules. I was the one that made sure everybody was good with that time. The only thing I didn't do was the DMing. Like I did everything mm-hmm. else though. So like, and the other players yeah. had no interest in editing or social media or any of that stuff or promoting. And there's a lot more than you think than right, just exactly. play the game.
Mm-hmm. And usually the conversation will be like, oh, I'm no good at that. Sorry.
It's like, neither was I.
Right, exactly. It's like, there's a learning curve here, please. But I will admit, like, since then, some people have, like, learned how to do more things on the behind the scenes. But even then, it's like, the thing about collaborating is also you got to set that up pretty early, like what your limits are. Because if people come to expect, oh yeah, they'll just take that, no worries, then
yeah,
it is harder for them to break that. Even if they say like, oh yeah, I definitely want to help, it's not even a conscious thing. It's like subconsciously in their head, it's like, well, if I don't do it, I know they got it.
Yeah, that's one thing I will say for anybody who wants to help somebody on like a podcast or a YouTube channel or anything. Please, if you say you're going to do it, do it. Don't bail last minute. Don't wait till the last minute if you can avoid it. Like if there's an emergency situation that comes up and you're like running behind, like let them know as soon as possible, because like I've run into situations where I was told Sunday afternoon and my episodes were posted Monday, oh hey, I wasn't able to edit it and I can't.
Right.
And then suddenly I have to find the time to edit that I had slotted for something else. And I have been yelled at multiple times for this. My schedule is pretty packed.
Yeah.
I easily put 60, 70 hours in a week. And I don't always have that time to do that.
You can't readjust for things like that as easily.
Right. Like if someone came to me on a Sunday now and said at 4 p.m. and said, hey, I need you to do this. And it was this, if it was yesterday, well, I had a date from 5 to 8:30 and then I had a game from 9 to midnight. When was I going to edit?
Right. There would have been no time.
I would have had to stay up late and then I had work the next morning until 3 and the post goes out at 4. So literally my only option would have been to stay up past midnight and edit the file to get it out on time or to make post it late, which I hate doing. So I avoided it at most costs. But yeah. In that situation, I probably would have done it because I would have been like, I'm so tired.
No, yeah, yeah. Working on Parallels Anywhere has been a weird thing because I walked out of that experience thinking simultaneously, wow, I'm really happy I made this weird concept work. And on the other hand, wow, I didn't realize how many people would drop some balls. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
I don't want to name any names because there were so many fantastic collaborators for Parallels right. Anywhere.
And that there happens.
But there were a couple where it was like, guys, gang,
it's,
friends.
I think the hardest part about running a podcast specifically or running a show, if it's streaming, YouTube, or podcasting, is the difference between friends and like business, basically.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you will run into situations where you have to put your business pants on, basically, and say, like, hey, this isn't cool. We need to talk about this. I need to make a decision. I need to cut somebody because they keep missing or because they keep making excuses or because they keep breaking the lines and veils rules or like whatever the case may be. Those rules and things are put into place for a reason. Obviously, like missing episodes, shit happens, emergencies happen. But if it's every week that you're rescheduling when other people can't reschedule, that becomes problematic, especially if you have deadlines to meet.
Exactly. Yeah. And the one horror story for PTA that I will tell, because I will not name any names. And this is also an episode that ended up just getting scrapped, was we did a one shot set in a sci-fi setting, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the crew for that were some people I knew. They had a very quick project, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those ones that started, had like 10 episodes, went on a hiatus, came back technically with a season 2 with whole different people because of out of game drama, and then one of those situations, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so we did it, and it went, I said for Parallel to Anywhere, like, hey, these episodes are kind of like an hour, you know? Like, they tend to be about an hour long. The first half of the one shot clocked in around 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, oh, we'll finish it later. We'll finish it another day. In my head, I'm like, the editing of this is going to be a nightmare. Because there was another episode I did that was, I want PTA episodes to be like an hour. And then I came onto someone's stream. And then because it was their stream, I abided by their rules, you know. But then they ended up doing 6 hours of content.
Oh, boy.
Split between two streams. And now here in the cutting room floor, I'm like, how am I going to take a 6-hour story and make it 1 hour? In a way that makes any sense at all.
You don't.
Yeah.
You do not. I've had that happen to a lesser extent.
Mm-hmm.
Mine was like, I usually do 2 to 3 hours. And recently I've cut it down to 2 hours because honestly, 3 hours is just too much and I need to lower that. Mm-hmm. But if a game requires longer, then we'll do 4 hours and I'll split it into 2 episodes.
Right.
Instead of just doing 4 hours, let me get this down as low as possible and try to make it all work. One, that gives me the same amount of work to deal with each time, but also like that's a month of content for me because I post bi-weekly for that show.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there have been games where I had something afterwards and we were like just so close to the end. And I'm like, we played so late and we were like running late and then there was technical issues. And then it's like 1 in the morning on a work day. And I'm like, can we free these, please, for the love of God, finish the story, please.
Right, yeah.
Like go to bed. We're already like 3.5 hours. I am so tired.
Yeah, exactly. But the situation that came out of that was like, yeah, it was long, but then like with that one group that said they were going to do a second half, like,
mm-hmm.
I got a message like a week later saying like, oh, hey, this group like entirely imploded. Like drama came up, yikes. And then this entire group like completely exploded. And I was like, how? I blinked. What?
Yeah.
You know? And then I was like, okay, fine. We'll turn the one half into the full one shot. We'll write up something at the end to make it work. Just send me what you already recorded. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Has not happened yet.
Of course not. Yeah, one thing I will say with collaboration is, and this is probably one of the harder things that I've had to learn, don't take it personally when somebody backs out or drops out or decides not to play with you anymore, or not to talk to you or block you or whatever. Like if you didn't do anything wrong and they decide to leave and not want to talk to you anymore, then, and you weren't being rude, then don't take it personally.
Yeah.
Just accept it and figure out a solution. Because I've had a situation where I won't name names, but it's going to be pretty obvious based off if you listen to the shows, at least a player dropped out mid session on like in the middle of a season, just dropped and disappeared. And we were very confused because they were just like dropping in and out that day because of technical issues. And we said, yeah, we'll just switch to Zencastr after this so we don't have those technical issues, but we're almost done with this episode, so let's just finish this episode. And then they logged off and never logged back on. And after about 10 minutes, we're like, oh, well, maybe they're updating their computer, maybe they're resetting, whatever. And then I went to go, they weren't responding via Discord, so I went to go message them on Twitter and found out I was blocked.
Wild.
On all of my accounts. So I asked one of the other players, can you go check? And they were also blocked. And then I looked at my email and I saw that they left my Patreon all within the course of like 15 minutes. And nothing happened during that game specifically other than the technical issues to cause that. Like, it's not like we got in an argument. Nobody said anything that we could think of, at least, but between the four of us, like nobody said anything that was disrespectful or rude. And we're like, the fuck is happening?
Right. Yeah.
So I started going into panic mode because I'm like, okay, well, I have X amount of weeks until I have to get this and I have to get the artwork and I have to do this and this and this and we have to figure out how to make it work. And we got it to work. We got a new character and it works out really well. And the story moved on, found a way to write that character out. But it was just, it was a lot to deal with at first. And it always is going to seem way more daunting at first.
Right. Yeah.
Because everything is changing and you're like, no, especially when you're like me and has to control, like I am a control freak to the letter of control freak. And when I have things planned and they don't go as planned, I'm like, well, I already wrote out on my calendar all the days and I have to go move.
Right.
Which is fine, but
it is still a lot to handle. Yeah,
it is. It is. But speaking of collaboration, have you, I know you have at least one with me, but let's go on to collaborating on other people's shows.
Yes.
What are some experiences that you've had that you liked or disliked about that? You just explained one of your dislike ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's one that you liked?
Oh, there were so many that I enjoyed genuinely. Like I said, most of the collaborators on PTA were wonderful. The majority of one-shots we did for World of Ear were fantastic. Most people loved the 1 hour in and out feel, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A ton of people were very happy with like all the story stuff that they got to do, even though we had limited time, and just thought it was fun. So like I can't think of one of the one shots that turned into a horror story, you know.
It's fair. Was there anything that you like you learned from playing with somebody else, you're like, I really like this?
Yes, but I can't remember specifics.
That's fair.
From like other shows. It always tends to seem to come, at least for me, it always seems to come from like personal friend ideas that just make me like, oh, that's genius, you know? But like, I'm certain that I have. I would have to like panel back through so much, you know?
I mean, that's completely legit. I know that I have found some things that I like that I learned from being on other shows, mostly technical things, but also some role play focused things as well. So for technical things, one of the biggest things that I've learned very recently is I was on Weave the Tale stream for a game of Cult, K-U-L-T. And Cult is a horror game. It's very dark. It's very disturbing. It has a lot of gore and like content warnings in it, and they were very open about that. They made sure to list all the content warnings. They were constantly reminded, and we had a lines and veils in place. But the thing that I liked the most that I learned about from that is we've always had lines and veils, but it never came up very often.
Right.
It was one of those like, don't do this. Cool. That's not in the game at all. We're good. In this game, because it was so horrifying and so dark, there was a constant check-in. Like whenever a new scene happened that was dark and had like a moment that could possibly be affecting someone or the character themselves were being affected and they wanted to make sure, is it the character or the player? They would message in a private chat with everybody, just an O and a question mark, and tag everyone. And then everybody would respond with O for okay back.
Hmm.
And if they weren't, they would put an X. And they are very, very adamant about this feature. And also, if you felt uncomfortable anytime and needed a break, to just turn your camera off and walk away and take a break and then come back when you're ready. So I really, really liked that because that was the first time I saw the safety tools used in a way that were actually needed in the game and could have been triggering or traumatizing without realizing, or just a little too much because of the type of game it was. And now I purposely like want to use that feature when I run games if I ever go a dark route like that.
Right. And like I think so many of us use them, but like you said, they come up so infrequently because like for a lot of non-horror experiences, it's a lot easier to be like, okay, well, we just don't have to use that. You know what I mean? Like if the thing is like a certain creature or a certain like phobia or something, it's just like, well, that just doesn't need to be a threat in this adventure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And
like, but in horror, that's not as hard.
Yeah. Those phobias were still listed. So like I have a doll phobia I've mentioned multiple times. So I said no dolls whatsoever because I will straight up have a panic attack. And that's not something I can just fade to black with. That's something that's like, oh, fuck. Nope. 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 Gotta go. So we didn't have any of that. And there were things that happened that were like, oh, fuck, that's dark. But it didn't like, it might have caused me anxiety because my character had anxiety, but it wasn't like I need to break or I need to step away. Right. And it's very important for one shots if you haven't played with these people before, which this was the first time I played with any of them. But I felt comfortable enough to jump in and play this dark story and go into details about dark things that I wouldn't normally feel comfortable with because of that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I've been reading into that because horror is something that is very fun to create, but it's also very tough to do right, you know?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Another thing I learned, and this was, I forget where I learned this. It might have been a home game. I think it was a home game. But as a DM, I picked up a tool set where at the end of the game, you go around the table and ask everybody their favorite RP moment and favorite combat moment in the game that day. And then reward experience points for whatever, like everybody gets 2. So I decided it's 25 experience points per vote, basically. And not only does this make people feel happy because they did something that was funny or that was really good for the story or was perfect for the game or made the party laugh or whatever, they also are rewarded for, like, that was a really smart idea with what you did with the sleep spell. We would have died otherwise. Or the moment where you're just acting super anxious around your date was hilarious and you just were being so awkward and I love that entire scene. And then it reaffirms to the players, like, you're doing a good job. Yeah. Here's extra bonus points for that. And that makes them feel, it also helps ensure that people are wanting to role play in the story to continue to do those things.
Yeah, it's interesting because in my situations, I end up having the opposite problem to what you just said, where like everyone will go off for hours about the RP stuff. And then like the fighter character will just be kind of standing in the corner like, okay, you know, like not to say that more combat oriented people don't RP, but it's more like in the groups I run with, there tends to be more of a focus on that. And then stuff in combat tends to feel like not forgotten, but formality, you know.
Yeah.
So like when I do comp, because what I do is I tend to, like, at the end of a session, I will go down the list and like compliment everyone and then encourage them to do it to each other. I tend to try and include combat stuff because it's like for some people that is something like there was a moment in the combat they were very proud of, you know. And then like, but because it wasn't funny joke or cute ship moment, like the other players didn't care as much, you know.
Yeah, that's why I purposely split the two.
Yeah.
But also, like, in the game that I use that the most, which is a paid game I run on Sundays, there, when the combat moments happen, there aren't a ton of them. It's mostly roleplay. But there are combat scenes that I won't really necessarily roll initiative for, and I'll just let them deal with the situation and see what happens. But even if I roll initiative, there are always some, like, I encourage them to role play out what they're doing and not just say, I run up and stab them. Right. Like, that was actually one of the rules for applying to the game, was you could not just say, I run up and stab something. Like, you have to go into a little bit more detail of how you're doing it, what you're doing it. Like, where are you running to? Just give a description to, like, get all of these, everybody a picture in their mind of this or an idea of what's happening.
It's so weird because, like, that's the part, like, when it comes to combat, that's the part that, like, I feel like everyone wants to do, but then they come up to think of how to do it in the moment and they just choke. Like, that's what it is for me. Like, I wish I could do that for every attack I make, but then I get up to that moment, I'm like, you know?
Yeah, I think the best idea is to sit down, if you've never done it before, is just sit down and, like, write a couple ideas out. Watch somebody fight. See how they react. So, like, for my monk, I always did unarmed strikes. So I was always punching them technically. But when I hit, when I got a killing blow in, I would say, I run up, I punch him in the sternum, I punch him in the throat, and then I wrap my thighs around his head and I twist, and then his neck snaps. And that's how I would flavor it. Like, I would do something that was not technically part of an unarmed strike, but why the fuck not? Like, I hit, I killed him. Does it really matter if it was with my fist, my foot, or my thighs? Like, I still killed him. The only thing that comes up in, like, the story is, like, if I say I'm going to kick somebody and I get a critical hit, I don't get to use some of the advantages that I would get if I use my fists, because my fists have the bracers on to help increase necrotic damage or whatever. but I can still hit them. I can still do damage. I can still kick them in, like, flavor wise.
Right.
And, like, if you're a barbarian, you can emphasize, or a fighter, you can emphasize, like, you breathing heavily, your arms are getting sore, your where you got hit previously hurts. And, like, you can emphasize those stories. And if you miss, like, you swing and you miss because you get a shooting, stabbing pain up your back where you got stabbed earlier in the day. Like, there's plenty of ways to just emphasize the world around you. Just think about this other senses that you're dealing with.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
And I love it so much.
It's very cool.
And I love playing with other people because they come up with such cool ideas. And then I'm like, well, that's happening now.
Yeah, this wasn't a home game, but one of my favorite things I got to do was I had a party member come up to me and they're like, hey, I wanna fight the big bad myself. And I went, you know, that's a horrible plan, right? Like, there's no way on earth I'm gonna let you solo the fight, you know, the boss of the arc, mm-hmm. without, like, losing horribly. And they were like, oh yeah, no, I know. Because, like, I had imagined that they were trying to go for, like, a hero moment, you know what I mean? When they DM me that, but then they were like, no, yeah, I know. I'm like, you're sure? Yep. You are going to lose horribly. You may potentially die. Yep. Why do you want to do this? Because my character's a reckless, impulsive idiot, and this is the thing he would do, thinking he could solve the problem by himself, and then he can learn a lesson about teaming up with everyone else if mm-hmm. he lives. And I was like, you know, that was not the answer I was expecting. Yeah, all right, let's make it happen.
Because it's fun.
Yeah, and sure enough, he missed one of the sessions because time zones are hell, and we decided to, you know, make amends for that with having there be a one-off for him that everyone could attend. It's how we tend to do that in that game, because it's a small mm-hmm. group, we can do that pretty easily, and that's when he decided to pull that trigger, and that one-on-one fight was great, because his character was a monk going up against a barbarian werewolf.
Mm-hmm. That's a fun fight.
So, like, the werewolf, like, has a great axe, and a big scary part about what makes him special is he can use, like, weapons and stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But the guy shows up and just lifts his fist, this little, like, white fawn satyr, so, like, white stag-looking fawn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And his response to that is to just drop the axe and, like, put up his claws, and it turned into just a fist fight in this forest at, like, the crack of dawn, and it was this cool sequence. And, like, again, he knew that this was not going to work, you know? And, like, right before the actual fight, as we were rolling initiative, I DM'd him, like, hey, you know how this is going to go, right? No hard feelings. He's like, I know this is going to go. We're good. And I was like, okay. And he goes, let's just put on a show for the others, yeah? And that was one of the most fun experiences I've had in a while.
Honestly, yeah. I love having side conversations with players. That's why I like playing online a lot.
Yeah,
because I can be telling someone else what to do in, like, hey, roll this, roll that, do this, what do you do with this, while I'm role playing with the other players.
Yeah.
So a perfect example in my Sunday game, there is this weird, very, like, the very awkward flirtation thing going on with one of the NPCs and the PC, and it's one of those things where, like, if it was a TV show, they wait until, like, the season finale to do the final kiss, but then they still don't do the final kiss type of thing. And it's just been prolonged for so long that you're like, the fuck, please just do it already.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So every time we get to a scene where it could happen, I message him and say, hey, do you want this? Like, what would you like to do? Because it's his story. And also, like, you should get consent before, like, kissing another player's character,
right?
Unless you've already, like, established that consent previously. Wow. But mm-hmm. every single time he's like, no not yet, let's make them wait. So I said, okay, well, in the last session yesterday, I said, I'm going to lean into something for it, but something will happen to stop it, so don't worry, just play along. So there's this really cute romantic moment between the two where they grab their hands together, they're facing each other, they're so close, and the lights dim down, and then they hear a shout. And then four, like, assassin type, they weren't assassins, but, like, assassin type people rush them, and he immediately goes into defense to defend the person he's with, even though he's not really a strong, like, that great of a strength character.
Mm-hmm.
And I had them, we just rolled a 3d20 each of us and compared the two to see what the who would win. And I won twice, he lost, or he won once.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, okay, you wake up with your hands tied behind your back and a pounding headache, and you feel Vapor, who is the NPC sitting next to you with her head on your shoulder, still asleep. And then now they have to like escape this other situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then the party already said what they're going to do for the morning, because this is a very, we're still villagers type of game. So they're like doing work and stuff like that. And this was like in the morning, so they're not getting together till noon. So I decided the warlock has a patron. The patron would talk to this cleric's god, potentially, who owes him a favor. And the patron will wake up the warlock and say, oh, by the way, the awkward one in your group. And they're like, Edric? Yeah, that one. He got captured. Just like casually.
He's gone.
I'm like, what? What do you mean? Yeah, he was on a date, I guess, or doing something, and then they got captured. Where? I don't know. Hold on. Yeah? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. His deity says it was there, the South Ward. Well, that's a huge place. Any particular place? A garden on a roof? And then they're like, wait, here. And then something pops in her hand. She's like, he told me to give this to you. And the cleric's patron is the traveler.
Mm-hmm.
And like three sessions ago, we did like a dream sequence type of thing, because we had two little players. So that's when a favor was offered to the cleric for helping. Mm-hmm. So he gives him a coin with a symbol of the traveler on it and says, this will get warmer when you get closer. And they had to play hot and cold in the middle of the water deep to find him.
Amazing.
And it's just so funny. And then the twist was the guy who is kidnapped with the other person thinks that they're here for him because of his past. And mm-hmm. I kept vaguely using terminology that wasn't pinpointing who exactly of the two of them it was meant to be. So he kept assuming it was him. And they're like, who the fuck do you think you are? No, we're here for her. Mm-hmm. And he finds out that like she is important in some way. And it just never came up, because she's like, she made a comment of like, we have a lot of similarities in our childhoods, actually. And that's all she said. She didn't go into detail.
Yeah, of course.
And I'm just like, someone's like, it'd be funny if she was this. I'm like, well, now she is.
Yeah.
Hello. Sorry for the interruption here, but I wanted to give you an advertisement for one of our friends in the tabletop community. Please give it a listen and go check them out.
Hey, Kitty.
Hey, Amber.
I have a question for you.
All right, shoot.
Of all the planeswalkers, which one's butt do you want to touch the most?
I should go with my gut. Karn. That ass is sculpted. Literally.
Speaking of butts, you better believe this is Red Mage, Blue Mage. Kitty, I'm really bad at this. That's our awesome Magic the Gathering podcast on the Geekspective Network. Oh my god, I can't stop laughing.
And neither can you. When you're listening to us talk about magic and lore and how to build commander decks and Oathbreaker decks, and us actually playing against each other, which is my favorite part.
Right, and you can hear us do all these things on Spotify, iTunes, or other major platforms like YouTube now as well.
And you can also send dank memes at us, dank magic memes at RedBlueMTG. We're down for that,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, the danker the better.
That's what I always say.
All right, bye.
Now, back to the show. So, back on collaboration.
Yeah.
But that was all collaboration, too. But
yeah.
If you wanted to collaborate with somebody, do you have any advice for people on how to get started?
Man, it never gets easier to ask, but it does. But you keep doing it anyway. Also, if writing out the words for asking is tough, you're going to do it eventually. So copy paste that into a document, and at least you have a start.
Like, yes.
Like a pitch request kind of deal. Like, for example, like when I was telling people about Parallel to Anywhere, there were a couple of times where I was like, oh yeah, I'm working on this thing. It's like a big collaboration with a bunch of other players. It's really cool. And I'm real excited about it. And they're like, oh, that's really cool. I can't wait to hear it. I'm like, yeah. And I walk out of the conversation being like, you idiot. Why didn't you just say, would you like to do an episode? Like, that happened more than once.
Oh, I believe it.
But when I finally got serious about, like, okay, I need to, like, just be up front and be like, okay, yes, I want to do this. Hey, do you want to do this thing? I wrote it out to a couple people. And then after I did that, I copy-pasted that. And so each time I, of course, changed a few details here and there to be more fitting to the group. But I often find that people fear, like, oh, I can't find the words because mm-hmm. they think they need to say something different and unique to each person. Nobody shares their pitches to each other. You know what I mean? Like, it's okay to start from the same base, if that helps.
Yeah, as long as you're not posting it multiple times on Twitter, on every single person's post, over and over and over again, to the point of obsessity and annoyance, then you're good.
Yeah, no. I mine was way more like, DM the person who I'd already built a rapport with, and be like, hey, I'm working on this thing, you interested? And then just leaving it there, you know?
Right.
I would say that's probably the best way to do it. Is like, yeah. just hey, this is the thing, this is how I'm working on it, here's as much details as I have at this moment in time, thoughts, you know?
Yes, I agree. Also, I have found out that, I have been told to think of yourself as an equal playing field of anybody, even if they're bigger or smaller than you. It doesn't hurt to reach out to someone who's much bigger than you in theory. They have more listens, they have more views, they have been doing this longer, they're a professional, whatever. You can still reach out to them. The worst they'll say is no or not see your message. But eventually, if you keep trying, they might say yes. Don't mm-hmm. be annoying about it.
Right, of course.
But like, I have always been afraid to like reach out to people because I'm very anxious and I don't like confrontation. Even though this isn't confrontation, my brain goes into the what if they hate me type of mindset.
Oh, of course. Yep. Mm-hmm.
But I reached out to Satine Phoenix when a friend mentioned that they were going to have her on the show because of her Kickstarter. And I reached out and she responded with, yeah, message my blah, blah, blah manager. Here's the email address. And she actually came on my show. And I was dumbfounded
yeah.
that she was there on a video chat with her husband talking to me for an hour and a half. And then later I saw B. Dave Walters had posted something, literally like a long description of things to do if you want to become more popular as a streamer in the TTRPG world. And one of the comments he made was podcasting, being a guest on a podcast might not make you money, but it will give you the exposure and put your name out there. And he says, I never say no, or I very rarely say no to a podcast interview because it means I can get my name out to more people. Even if he like has hundreds and thousands of people who already know who the fuck he is.
Right.
So I took that. I was like, okay, hey, you want to be on my show?
Right.
He
exactly.
said, yes. He said, as long as I can fit it in my schedule. Yeah.
Awesome. The tough thing for Parallel to Anywhere is like when I pitched this, there were a bunch of people who were bigger that I wanted to throw it out there to, you know, mm-hmm. but I was just, man, it's nerve wracking, you know? And I will say I'm very happy with a lot of the guests and a lot of the episodes went really well. Moving forward with the show, I do think like after season one, because I have recorded all but the scripted and like a cut one or two one shots mm-hmm. for the whole season. Like the whole season is basically recorded and needs to just be edited, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like the thing that is, because when you talk about collaboration, I think there is, because like coming on the show is that, and like doing all this is that. But equally difficult is like, and this is because this is where I am in the pipeline in this process, that this is where my head's at, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But like equally scary is like, okay, this is a new show. And yes, I have carryover from Wildervere. And yes, I have carryover from Frostwalkers, you know? And like,
mm-hmm.
that is not something I take for granted. But still, this is a new project. You need to get your name out there all over again, you know?
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah. With the scary part with new projects is needing to start from zero, essentially.
Yep.
And like telling people, hey, because that's the thing I always feel, right? Because it's like seeing the like 1,000 or so Wildervere followers and then jumping to PTA that has like 200 is like, man, you know?
Yeah. So this year, two new podcasts are going live for me. I've already recorded most of the first show for one of them. And I should be recording the third and fourth episode for this other one in 2 weeks. And I've already set things in place for dates that they should be released. And it's a whole new podcast. Like, I literally I'm starting two completely different podcasts that are technically unrelated to Beholder to No One, even though I'm going to say that they're part of the same sister programs.
Right, right.
And Beholder will share them and blah, 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 because I run everything. But it's scary because it's a different thing. I couldn't put another show on this podcast. There's three shows. That's too many as it is.
Yeah.
So I'm starting a podcast called Dice Before Dawn, which I've mentioned multiple times on the show, but it is for darker games, not necessarily cult, dark, terrifying horror games, but like Vampire the Masquerade, Werewolf, Delta Green, Call of Cthulhu, like those types of games that can lead down darker paths and are more, have a little bit more of a serious tone to them, and death is a lot more inevitable.
Right.
And then the other one is a complete sci-fi series. And it will be, the first show is a Savage World in a sci-fi realm. And then the second show will be Teens in Space.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And then I want both of those podcasts to continue with actual plays. And if, like, the vampire one, I think will stick for a while, but even still, we want to play other games. So we'll do like a season of Vampire and then like a short bit, like a one shot of X sessions for Delta Green, and then a season of Vampire, and like rinse and repeat of new shows so we could try all of the things.
Mm-hmm.
And if we get more popular, we can add in somebody else who might be interested in running one shots or something and release two, but I don't want to go over two right. in these ones. And I kind of want to just keep it that way. Or honestly, I think I might keep it at one a week max with those ones, and just like, because I post them bi-weekly, should be fine.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, that's the scary part. Like I said, starting from zero, because like, and I think this is a good example, is that like moving from Wildervere to Parallels to Anywhere, right? I had to go to a lot of the same people and be like, hey, I'm making this thing, you know, like, come check it out. And I feel like so many people see that and are like, don't I already follow them? You know what I mean? Like, because they're just, because the Discord is the same, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
And it's like, what are they doing? I mean, I already, whatever. You know what I mean? And it's like, like, it's weird because there's so many benefits to having like those secondary projects, and there's these other weird downsides that you don't think about, you know? It's just a new experience, I guess. And it's tough, right? Because Wildervere was probably a much bigger project. It got much like more quick, snappy attention to it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be honest, I have no idea how.
Because it's a good game.
Well, yeah, probably, hopefully. But then like beyond that is the like, man, hey, Lightning, I really appreciate it if you could strike twice, you know?
Yeah, yeah, honestly. And honestly, like, even when you start over, now you know things that you didn't know before.
Oh, right.
That you can add and give yourself a better chance.
Right, and it is the most, like, hair-pull thing I've experienced, is someone, like, coming into the stuff I've made and being like, they'll listen, they'll be like, okay, well, yeah, they listen like the first episode of Frostwalkers, and like 2 months later they'll listen to something new and they'll be like, wow, you really grew and all that. I'm like, yes I did. Something you would have, you know, like, the obviously you listen to things in chronological order, but sometimes it hurts my brain that people will listen to the first episode of campaign one of Frostwalkers as like their introduction to my work, because it is not up to current par, you know.
Yep, I understand that. You have no idea how many times I was contemplating deleting the first X amount of episodes in my podcast. Basically anything pre-July of 2020. And I was encouraged not to, because I did do them. I have started the show. That was part of the journey. But my concern is, like, how many people listened to that first one that was so badly edited, that had too many people on it, that I didn't know what I was doing, so you could tell I was nervous, and decided this isn't worth the stay.
Exactly. Ugh.
Even though it's a discussion episode, and, like, nothing is chronological, and you could listen to anything. Or how many people were like, oh, this is great, and then they get a couple episodes later, and they hear an episode with my first co-host and hear the differences of my attitude, because I know that it changed when I was talking to him versus somebody else.
Right.
I'm very proud of things I came up with after July 2020 when I came back after a 2-month break. I'm very proud of everything I made from then on out because I've learned how to do things better. I learned how to tweak things from collaborating with other people. I learned how to edit better. I learned how to record better. I learned things while I was going with mistakes that I made, like having separate channels while recording versus not. Or right. how to mm-hmm. remove background noise, or how to shorten silences, or how to like loop music, like all these little things that help you make it just sound a little bit better each time through editing, or how to market yourself.
That's the one I struggle on most still.
I honestly, same. Like I've been doing this officially for 2 years. And last month I had a meeting with someone who does marketing really well, and they taught me some stuff that was mind-blowingly simple that I should have known. And I'm like, oh, that makes a lot of fucking sense. Why wasn't I doing that?
So like when this episode's over.
We'll talk.
Cool.
But it's just like a lot of it is just knowing your audience and using the tools that are out there to help you understand what is working and what isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Scheduling tweets. The biggest one was scheduling tweets, and not just at any time, always schedule tweets and look at what time people are looking at your shit to schedule around that time.
Yeah.
Which there are websites that allow you to do that, which is weird. I can analyze my entire followers and their activity time.
That is weird.
Yeah. It's very stalkery, but they don't show me specific details of the person. They just show me generalizations, but still
On the marketing thing, I hate to cut in, but just like the one thing that always gets me, you know, is like, mm-hmm. and I'm certain if I open this door too wide, we can talk about this for hours, but like there is such a, I'm going to be real. The community online is very nice, and you can throw something out there and chant 9 times out of 10, it'll just dogpile out of control, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing though is that like there is that, and equally true, there are things that are like, wait, hold on. This is exhaustive. Like, God, as like great of an idea as it is, a lot of like current self-promo Saturday stuff is so exhausting that it's like beyond discouraging to do it.
Agreed.
Like, Saturdays will come and I'll be like, I know, I mean, I should, but also like, God, I don't want to. And it's just too much, you know?
One thing that I've done with self-promo Saturday is I've made sure to just do a handful and then I'll go away. And I'll come back and do a handful again. And I'll like or retweet one or two, and then I'll mute the conversation. Because I just don't have time.
It's just so tempting because like once you start, you just kind of have the tag up and you just kind of see how long it goes. It's just like you either give up or you tell yourself you're gonna hit every single one on that list.
No, I never try to hit every single one. I will go look at one or two that are on the list currently, share their things, like a bunch of other ones, but then I got to go. I got other work to do.
Yeah, I honestly do think a better system needs to come into play and soon, because it stops being like, oh yes, let's support, and it turns into an endurance match.
Yeah, and it's a fine line because you don't want to just post and leave. Like if you post and leave, everybody else posts and leave, nothing happens.
Right.
No one's getting anything out of that. The other one that exhausts me is Follow Friday. So like when I do Follow Friday, I will specifically only point out 2 people and I will list a reason why for those people.
That's the way I do it too. That like the lists and like the circles things, like, so it's so, and like I get why they do it because that is what works. You know what I mean? Like
that's what gets you the traction.
Right. That is what works. But also like, this is gonna turn into a critique of the D&D Twitter space, isn't it? But like who cares? The thing I always, you were on this point earlier, but like the thing you mentioned about like you, there's this fine line between posting and running and then like devoting hours to a Twitter thread. And it's mm-hmm. like, I've slowly become a little jaded to the, like, here are the rules you have to follow part, not because it's a bad idea, but because no one enforces them. And like, because who has the time? You know what I mean? Right. Like the people were like, your thing will be deleted if you don't do this. How will you know? How do you see that? And like, who has the time to look through every comment and check that they did that? I guess my thing is like, if you're gonna say you're gonna do that, do it. And if not, just be honest.
I literally think I just say on mine, don't be a dick or retweet. Yeah. Something along those lines.
Yeah. I've seen ones that are like, here are the mechanical rules, the 5-step rules process you must follow. And it's like,
too much work.
You are not going to, but you are, there's no way on earth you're going to know that everyone has followed all 5 of those rules and that you're going to go through each one and remove the ones that don't. I know this is just a threat, but also it's such a hollow threat that it's kind of laughable. And please just be honest.
Yeah. And the one that irritates me on Follow Friday is I've actually muted this person. Like, I haven't unfollowed them or blocked them or anything because they're not a bad person. But every Follow Friday, they will post like 18 lists in one thread. And I'm always on there twice or 3 times even. And then I just have 30 notifications all of a sudden.
Oh, yeah, because you'll get 30 notifications and you're thinking, and you don't know any better, and you're thinking to yourself, oh man, something I wrote must have gone, like, this is great.
Or you something know? Terrible went wrong and oh shit, what blew up in my face?
Yeah, yeah, something. And then you turn and it's like, oh, it's all just people I don't know liking, okay.
Saying thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I mean, I know you have to, but also, like, the sheer amount of thank yous. It's always like, it's either just the word thank you or a gift. Please.
I literally, if it's somebody who posts that like that, like if it's just like a short list, like 5-10 people, maybe.
Yeah.
I will comment, I'll respond, I'll put my shit down and thank them and then keep it unmuted for a little bit. And then eventually I'll mute it when it gets annoying. If it's 1 or 2 people, then I'll definitely say something and I'll be like, oh my God, thank you so much. This is amazing. This made me feel so good. And I'll interact a lot more with that one. But if it's 1,000 fucking people on the same goddamn thread, I used to just like it. Now I don't even like it. Like, I'm like,
yeah, it's just exhausting.
No. Like you're just literally doing this for one reason and one reason only. And it's not to, it's to get the clout first off.
No. Yeah.
And to get the fucking engagement. That's the only reason.
Right. And like, it, going back to SPS too, like the people who have the like 5-step rules and stuff like that, I cannot tell you how many times the first rule is follow this page, like, and comment. You know what I mean? And it's like, or the, like, you know what I mean? Like, that. Yeah. How many of the rules are that? And of course you should, if someone is letting you, of course, you know? But there's a line between like, hey, this person is opening the door for you, you should pay the favor in kind, you know? There's that. And then there's, oh, this is so blatantly, transparently this, that it's not even funny.
So I use a website called unfollowme.org. Mm-hmm. Or unfollowedme.org, I think, maybe, whatever. And I don't use it for follow, which is what most people use it for, because people, like, literally before when I did Twitter back in the day for my YouTube channel, literally, I was told, go follow like 1,000 people and then give it a week. If they don't follow you back, unfollow them, rinse and repeat. Don't fucking do that.
No.
You will get the most shallow and low results in engagement possible. Like, there was a person that followed me called like Schwarm or something like that. And when you look at his account and he follows you, you're like, oh, cool. This big name person has hundreds of thousands of followers is following me. This is awesome. Especially when you're like a newbie and you look at their account. And I literally looked at his account trying to figure out what he even did. And I couldn't find anything. Like, I found a website that said he's a husband and a father. And like, that's it. That's all I could find.
Mm-hmm.
Literally nothing else. And if you scroll through his page, you see retweets, and the retweets have some traction. Anything he posted himself, 0 interaction completely, which tells you a lot about that account personally.
Yeah.
So I use unfollowed for specifically to see if someone follows me, and then once I follow them back, they unfollow me.
Mm-hmm.
So that I will basically go through and 98% of the time, if someone unfollows me, I will unfollow them, unless it's somebody that I have seen their work and I appreciate their work. And Maya might be sad that they unfollowed me. I am like, it's their life. It's whatever.
Right.
I think I reached out to like 3 people who've unfollowed me and have been actually like disappointed that they unfollowed me out of like the hundreds of thousands, possibly, I don't know, hundreds of people who have unfollowed me. But if it's anybody else who unfollowed me and I'm like, I don't even know who you are, but I think you just followed me like 3 days ago. So I'm just going to unfollow you back because you are not getting my follow if you're just doing it for follow.
Right, exactly.
Anything else you want to add about collaboration? And
yeah, I think the other thing would be like, it's part of the like, don't be scared to ask people things thing. I think the caveat to that is like, know how to do, like where to do it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The comments of a tweet is probably not the spot to do it. If you're going to like approach someone with, hey, would you be interested in providing a voice for this thing or doing a thing for the, you know, like that is a DM question because you don't put someone on the spot like that in front of the collective internet.
Yeah. Also, like, make sure you're posting it on the right thing if you are reaching out to them. Like, hey, is it okay if I message you about this? Like, that would be maybe okay. But, like, if I'm posting, I've had people comment on things where it's like, this is my self-promo. Here's everything I'm involved in. Like, and I have, like, 12 tweets of all the shit I'm in. Don't respond to it. Can you please listen to my show and give it a review? I would really appreciate it. And you're not even following me?
Yeah, not the place, not the time.
And like, also, like, make sure you're following the person you're DMing at least, and like,
yeah,
try to say something about like what they've done that you liked.
Right.
So like when I reached out to B. Dave Walters, I mentioned like I really enjoy your vampire character in LA by Night. It's my favorite vampire series that I've watched, and I think Temple is a great character. So I mentioned that. Because it's true. I'm not like going to mention every single thing he's ever done because I haven't watched everything he's ever done.
Right. And no one's expecting you to.
Right. There's not enough time, I think, to watch everything that B. Dave Walters has been involved in.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think the honest thing is like, you do not need to know the person you are asking inside and out to ask. But if you know one thing and that's like, be honest about the reason you're reaching out to them. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
If you know this person does two different shows, but you've only seen the one, you don't need to say, I haven't seen the other one. You can just say, hey, I really, really dug this show here and what you did for it. And
right.
You know what I mean?
I loved your acting as X character. I think you did a phenomenal job. And I have a character very similar to that I think you'd be perfect for this show or something along that lines. Or I will have a couple of characters that you might be, if you were interested, that I think you would do a fantastic job of being voice actor for. Also be transparent if you're not paying.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like be transparent about it. And also, don't be afraid of that, I think, would be the other thing. Because, like, depending on what it is, there are some people who would be willing to throw, like, a cameo line in. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I guess just be honest, right? The worst that they can say is no.
Right, exactly.
Better to be honest about what you can and can't do than promise someone you supposedly want to work with things that you can't hold up.
Right. On that note, where can everybody find you?
Yeah, so I've been talking a lot about Parallel Timeverse, so I'll start with that. It is a weird show. I can't call it any one thing. It is a mix of scripted and one-shots. There are scripted episodes and one-shot episodes. I should be clear about that, because people think that means the one-shots are scripted. No, it's that some episodes are fully VA'd and some episodes are legit, just a crossover one-shot with other groups, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of fun. The first episode should be coming out soon? Question mark. Shrug emoji. You know, I don't know.
Is that the one that's sitting in my inbox right now?
It might be.
Okay.
I didn't want to sound mean about it. That wasn't that, but it was just,
no, I know.
I really don't know.
I'm gonna work on it soon.
Take your time. But you know, you can never be sure because there's just so much that goes into any production. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. My vampire game was supposed to go live last year.
Right, yeah. You can never know. But there is an episode zero. There is a short introduction to the characters. There's a Discord where I am actively like showing people the progress and like, I swear we're not dying. There's just a lot that goes into this. And this is a new venture, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you want to get a feel for the main characters, episode zero is out. Depending on when this goes out, episode one might or might not. Scheduling is weird.
Will not be.
That is fair. Scheduling is weird, you know, that's just how it is.
What Twitter account can people find you on?
Parallel Anywhere is at P2 Anywhere on Twitter. I am going to be shouting that one out more frequently, not because World of Gear isn't a project I'm working on, but because Parallel Tinyware is new and therefore needs love, so.
All right. You heard them. Go look at the descriptions down below and give some love to the show. Also, because I'm going to be editing it, so yay!
Yes, I'm very excited. I'll end on this little note, because when I decided that some of the episodes are going to be fully scripted, it was super exciting because it was the first time I've ever, like, something I have fully scripted gets voiced, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It was also terrifying because I know how to edit Craig recordings like this one.
Yep.
I do not know how to handle 4+ different people sending me their lines.
Guess what? Me either, but I'm going to figure it out.
Yeah, no, I'm committing to trying it too. What I did, and I'm trying to get as many people who can to do the Craig recording style, even if it is scripted, because it's not that hard to do it with Craig, you know? But we'll see how that goes in the future. But yeah, it's scary and new and exciting, and I would just really appreciate the support there, because it is supposed to be this big celebration of the insane, varied culture that there is here.
All right. Thank you again so much for joining. It's been wonderful chatting with you again.
Yeah.
And everybody go give some love again down in the description below and check out the new show as well as all the other stuff. And if you want to talk to me, you can find me on Beholder to No One on Twitter, Dice Before Dawn on Twitter, or Sound Control RPG on Twitter. Mostly the Beholder to No One account, which is where you will hear about all of my shows. If you want to hear me DMing last Friday, the official first episode of Tower of Souls went live, and I am the DM for that. It's a deadly game based in the chaos world, and it's very chaotic, and I love it, and I was told to be as evil as I wanted, and I took that to heart. Ooh. So you should go listen.
Oh yes, I should. That sounds awesome.
If you want to hear me this week, I will be on Weave the Tale playing Upriver Downriver on Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. If anything changes, I will post it on Twitter. And on the 28th, I will be part of a charity stream, and I will post the details about that on Twitter as well with Novi Studio. Every Friday, starting again in not this week, but I think next week or the week after, we will be back on Weird Web on 2000 Tales on Twitch. So if you haven't caught up to that, you can listen to the podcast episodes of all of season one and so far of season two, and you can come join us in our chaotic endeavors.
Awesome.
That's all for me, I think. Keep being awesome. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.
Hey, before you go, I just wanted to let you know that this episode was edited by Matt over at Walsh Animation. They are part of the Table Party podcast, and I wanted to give a little bit of a shout out to them, especially because Matt has been such a freaking lifesaver when it comes to editing the discussion episodes recently. So please listen to this ad for Table Party podcast and go check them out and make sure you give them some love. Thanks.
What makes Table Party different from other tabletop podcasts?
The music.
The setting.
The characters.
The gore.
A bunch of different games.
The refreshing coldness of ice cream.
The 300-foot-tall squid named Delilah.
The dice rolls.
The horrifying body horror.
The aroma.
The suffering of my players.
Dairy Queen blizzards.
The luxurious plush texture.
The free coupons.
Bad decisions.
And who can we expect?
I'm Kelsey.
I'm Matt.
I'm Gabe.
I'm Walsh.
I'm Chris.
Welcome to the Table Party.
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 Welcome to the Table Party.